Hey Riders, have you been spending small amounts on short-term classes, watching videos, and using up every possible opportunity for free feedback? Reworking the same pages over and over in your writing group? Are you starting to feel like you're stuck in one stage of the process? Maybe it's time to consider making a bigger investment in your career and working with an author accelerator book coach. No one can guarantee that you'll write a book that will snag an agent or excite an editor, but a coach can help you move forward, finish a book or proposal you're proud of, and approach the next stage of the process like a pro. I know it helped me. If that sounds like something you could use, visit www.authoraccelerator.com to get matched with a coach who can help you.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done. And while you're at it, getting that work out into the world. Because that's kind of what we're talking about today.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of several USA Today best-selling romance novels. My new one is a novella called Must Love Hockey. And you can find me wherever ebooks are sold.
And I am KJ Delantonia, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, as well as a new novel coming out this summer, In Her Boots, available in July, and the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent. I'm a former editor and lead writer of The Motherlode at The New York Times, and I still contribute occasionally to a variety of things in small ways, basically. And we have a guest today. We're very excited to talk about what should and shouldn't be on your author website with listener Anne Letizier. She is a listener with a question. What should I have on my website and how can I get there without breaking the bank? She is also the author of 6 traditionally published inspirational titles, some out of print, a speaker, and the creator of a rather genius non-blog blog idea that I may just have to steal for myself. So keep listening to hear that. We're gonna go over her website and talk about making it more professional while talking about what you all should have on yours, because websites are a must-have for authors, but they don't have to be anything fancy.
All right, let's do it. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you.
I have pulled up your website on my laptop here and also on my phone because I want to see both versions. So why don't you tell us about your website and why this is your question of the moment?
Okay, I'm not a very techie person, if that makes sense. So this was a massive thing for me to build a website. I did it originally 5 years ago, I think. And I had a little bit more on that one. I had a few more drop-down menus and so on. And I didn't feel it was doing a lot for my work. So I let it slip when the payment came due 3 years after. And then 6 months after that, I felt, no, I really needed one again. So I had to start the process all over again. And I made a slightly simpler one, which is there now, knowing that I really did need a website. It's not a place that at the moment I can sell books. I feel it looks very static. I'm not sure if I should make it busier or simpler when I look at other people's websites. I just know I need more of a presence out there. I need to engage more with my reader. I want to give them something more, I think, if they should go and look at my page.
Can we talk for a minute about why authors need websites?
Of course.
Serena, thoughts? Shall I throw some?
Yeah, I mean, we want to ask all the tough questions today, and why is absolutely the first one.
So there's sort of why does Anne right. need a website, which is one thing. What do you individually want from your website? But there's also, why can't, you know, does Stephen King have a website? Well, probably. I've actually never looked, but, you know, he can maybe get away without one. Why do the rest of us need one?
Well, and you said a minute ago that you feel like you need one. So what is the impulse of that? Like, Is there a way that readers are able to talk to you and find you without it? How does it work for you in your life right now?
I think, to be honest, I feel I need a website because publishers say I need a website. And a bit like I have to have a social media platform. I got turned down on a book proposal almost a year ago because my platform wasn't big enough, which is fair enough. It is very small. So you feel this sort of pressure to have something. And some folk are really good at it. They have that technical expertise. I'm not so good at it. So that's my primary reason for having one. I do visit author websites myself, so I see there's something in it, but I don't spend a lot of time on them.
Okay, that is all very fair. And platform is one of those words that, you know, is very terrifying to most everybody because it's thrown about as a thing we need. And for good reason, like we all understand what it means to have a big platform, but actually growing one is just really difficult. So I would like to argue that websites are not platform unless you use it that way. So I have a lot of stuff on my website that readers want from time to time. But it's only because I am sending people there. So a website in and of itself does not ever sell books. One could argue that social media is at least putting things into a place where others can find them. But again, social media has its own problems, which is that you don't own your following there. Somebody else does. And that is tremendously frustrating. So that does bring us back to at least the idea that a website is the best place to host all the things about you that you want people to be able to find, and also to serve as a place where you can send people for more information. It's like the highest compliment someone can give you is not liking a thing on Twitter. It's coming all the way to your website and looking at it. So when I talk to authors about websites, I like to remind them that most of the time when somebody comes to our website, it's because they have a specific question in mind. And the website's primary job most of the time is to answer that question within one click or maybe two at the most. So depending on the kind of author, the question could be, what is the new book? You know, I saw it and I forgot. What is the new book? When is the new book? Which book do I read first? How do the books go together? Is there another book? Things like this. And of course, there are authors who have more going on in their life than just the books they publish. Maybe there are people who also rely on speaking income. And so a website can serve as a double calling card. Here's where to find me for speaking, and here's my books. And finally, and probably most important, here's where to sign up for my newsletter. So that is pretty vital. But since in the last couple decades, what constitutes a website has really changed. Like, we'll still define it as something that you have control over what's on it. But there are people making a good argument for, you know, like this restaurant that we order from sometimes. I have to remind my husband, like, oh, that's the place that only has the Facebook page. So we have to go and dig out the menu from there. And I don't love that, but I like to eat their fried chicken. So I will, you know, lower myself to finding what I need from their ugly Facebook page instead of their website. So a website can be quite inexpensive, and that is part of the factor, right? Like, you know, that restaurant is saving money and time by having only that Facebook page. But for example, I'm a member of the Authors Guild, which is a really lovely organization with authors at its heart, and they do very good work. But they will also offer a free website to their members. And so there are some people for whom that is just the perfect thing. Like, they don't have a lot of demands on their website, and getting a free Authors Guild website is pretty much all they need. And there are also some free website hosting companies, but I will have to confess ignorance about them because I only use Squarespace, and Squarespace is not free. There is no free plan. I find them to be very, very reasonable for a lot of reasons. But there are some that you can do that are actually free. And for example, you could, at least I'm pretty sure you can still do this. You could make a Blogspot with Blogger that's part of Google and not pay for that. And because you would control that thing, that qualifies as a space where you can do what you wish. And then let's talk about that newsletter thing, because that's pretty crucial for selling books. If you have an ESP, which stands for email service provider, like MailChimp or MailerLite or one of their ilk, every one of those things will make you a landing page to sign up for it. You know, it's a web-based form that they host. So if you were being really clever, you could actually use that website as your home base. But it's probably a bad idea, because then if you decide to change ESPs, you know, as your career grows, then all of a sudden you've been sending people to the wrong spot for a long time. So that's not a recommended thing to do. And yet, if you were to sort of host yourself at somewhere free or inexpensive and then just refer people to that sign up from your website, that would also work. So these are all of the low tech, low trouble, you know, ways to go about getting what you want. So, but with that in mind, and because you've taken the time and the effort to make your website, let's have a look at it, shall we?
All right, I'm popping a link to the website, of course, into the show notes, as well as links to everything else that we talked about here.
So, Anne, for you, what's working well for you about this website? What have you got here that is essential, and you know that, you know, the core of it is correct?
I'm happy that I've summarized who I am in a small dose on that front page. But having read other websites, I see a lot of people talk a lot more about themselves. Maybe I should add more. And I'm happy that I have had some contact through the contact page, for not so much during the pandemic, of course, but previous to that with my old website for speaking engagements or queries on things. Not so much the writing, interestingly. That tends to come more direct, but certainly with the speaking, the contact page has been quite useful.
Wonderful. So what I like about this website right off the top is that your domain name is your own name, because domain name is very powerful for search engine optimization. So that's great. Like if somebody's looking for you on the web, they type in your name, they are going to find this fairly quickly. And the only reason they wouldn't is if your books at Amazon came up first, or some giant conglomerate like that who has so much market power. So that's probably going to work well for you. And then there's a picture of you, which is great, especially for somebody who does speaking work. If you didn't do speaking work and your books were 100% your primary income, I would rather see a cover first, like your most recent book. Because again, with those questions that people come with, you know, for somebody who does speaking work, the question might be, who is Anne?
Mm.
But if you're me, people don't care about me. They just want, you know, fiction's different. Like they just want the story. So you have to click to a bio page to see a picture of me. But it's, you know, the latest cover is right there for the taking, because that's what I perceive as what readers are looking for when they come and find me. Mm. So, and of course you have who I am, and it's one paragraph, which I love, by the way. It's the rare situation where you need to have a lot about you. But again, as an expert in your field, you may feel that, you know, certain kinds of training or awards you've won or anything like that also belongs on the website. That's fine. I actually have a page of awards I've won, but it's really for the benefit of publishers. You know, if somebody wants to license my fiction into a new language, then I want them. It's right on my bio page to see all of the, you know, the wonderful things people have said, because it just makes my brand look stronger. But it's, again, on a separate page because readers don't care. What I do is great. And And you've been, it's very orderly. One issue with your website is that it has a sidebar.
Yeah.
And sidebars are kind of going away. And indeed, on mobile, your sidebar is at the bottom, which is probably fine. But to me, somebody who's not super young anymore, it's a little terrifying what portion of my web stats come from people on phones. It is more than half.
Okay.
So even though, of course, I'm not designing my website on my phone because that is just madness, I must always look to see how the mobile version works. And actually, tablets are quite low down. So it's like the phone, the full screen website, and then tablets are like a distant third. So your sidebar becomes a footer, basically. And you, in your sidebar slash footer, you have social media links. That's fine. When I talk to authors about websites, they often will say, oh, I want those social media links at the tippy, tippy top. And I ask, why? Like, if somebody has taken the trouble to find you in your home on your website, do you really want to ship them off to Instagram right now? Because I don't, you know, if they find me there, great. But I'm under no illusion that anyone who visits my website is just dying to go follow me on Instagram. I'd rather have them click on a book and become enamored with the topic and want to read more. So you're doing fine in that respect. Your site is under-designed, meaning that like the title at the top, although very easy to read, nothing wrong with it, is non-splashy, we'll just say. And your website, I would also say, lacks hustle. Because I haven't seen on this front page a cover of any of your books. And I wonder if you would challenge yourself to ask yourself, like, okay, is it show versus tell? Like, I can tell people what I'm trying to do, or I can show them the book. So if you've had good luck with the cover gods, and you like the way your book is packaged, and you feel that it does tell the right story about you, then I would consider putting it, you know, first or at least side by side with you, if that makes sense to you. If not, like if you're trying to change your brand, if you're making it a shift, if the book is too old, like there's lots of reasons not to put it on the front page, but we should always know why we put the thing on the front page. So that is the thing I would ask you to think about for later. So then websites have a main navigation. And yours works well in mobile, which is nice. It's not too hard to find. And your navigation headings are about, books, contact, privacy policy, and word for the month. And that is great. That is all in a perfectly good order. I would love to know where your sign up is, though. Like your newsletter sign up should also be like front and center somewhere, because, of course, that is the way we start our relationship with a reader, and then we can keep it coming.
Confession. I don't have a newsletter.
I was just going to go out on a limb and say exactly that. But do you know what? Yes, you do. At least you have the basis for one, which is what I was referring to when I said you had kind of a genius non-blog. I love that instead of it saying blog here, it says word for the month. That makes me want to click. Word for the month. What's her word of the month? I wonder if she really puts up a word of the month. Ooh, it's March. I wonder if there's a March word. So I would go and look at that, whereas if it was like blog, I'd kind of be like, eh, that's probably out of date. She probably doesn't do it. So you have a newsletter because you are keeping up with the word of the month. Although I will. Yeah, you've got March. It's already there. So all your newsletter says, hey, get my word of the month, which is such a low ask. Mm-hmm. I think people are like, oh, I would like a word of the month that makes me feel more connected to my faith. That would bring me great joy. Your people would like that. And you've already written it. So this is a no-brainer for you.
That is so true, KJ. Like, I kind of want one too. Like, what a great thing.
I that's why I'm saying I'm stealing this. Like, I'm like, I could so much more easily send people a word of the month than anything else. Like, I could send them the book of the month, but that's kind of been done. I love it. It's just so invitational.
I have had it on my to-do list. There's somebody that can talk to me about setting up a newsletter, and I need help with all this. So that's going to be my first to-do, have a chat with her.
You probably don't need as much help as you think. You've said several times you feel non-techie, and that's fine. But this stuff, and especially now, and if you did this 5 years ago, you're in a different world. People have made it way easier. Okay. You could pop into MailChimp or MailerLite or Flowdesk, which is an inexpensive option. And they are basically like, hi, Anne, take my hand. Let me bring you into this world. And, you know, you could input 10 email addresses and then put a little sign up on your website. They really do it for you. Okay. So it's much easier than it used to be, because I know exactly what you mean. It used to be kind of like, well, I don't want it to look like this. And I don't know. It used to be a lot more intuitive, but they've made it almost insanely intuitive now.
Okay. There is also a book called The Newsletter Ninja that I personally have not read, and probably should correct that. But
okay. I have.
Okay.
It's great.
But people say that it's great. So if you're feeling intimidated, yep, I think The Newsletter Ninja might be one place to go. And I loved what KJ said about how the word of the month is a low ask. It really is. You're not saying, please give me your email address so that I can talk about myself all the time. It's a taste of champagne. It's like it's a little bonbon that you're offering that does really speak well to your audience. So that's just really lovely.
Thank you. Yeah, I kind of went with that rather than a longer blog, because I read a lot of longer blogs and I just wanted to give something shorter.
It's also a low ask of you. You know, it's once a month. You're already doing it in this format. All you have to do is take that little illustration you're already creating and that text that you're already creating, and you send that out. And if at the same time you have, you know, like just to have a little bit of a newsletter class, maybe every other one, you put a little ask in there. Hey, what's your word of the month? Or, hey, you know, click here to follow me on Instagram. Or, hey, I do have a new book coming out. If you'd like to see the cover, here it is. You know, so every month, every other month, maybe you throw something else out there, because it is nice to get people used to the idea that they might click something in your email. But mostly, I feel like what you're giving is something your people are going to want to get. So they're going to open it.
It's positive. It's helpful.
Lovely. Well, if you did want to think about your homepage.
Yep.
And I put a picture of the homepage in the show notes, because I'm guessing it might change soon. And I realize people won't be able to see what we're talking about. So I popped a little picture in there for everyone. And I'll let Serena say offer some tips for adding hustle before I contribute.
Well, when I used to help people with their websites very directly, I had a questionnaire that I sent to everybody that they would fill out before we began. And there was a question about what goes on your front page that went like this. One of the hardest decisions is, what do you want your visitors to see first when they arrive on your site? In other words, the most valuable real estate should be allocated to one of the following. It could be your newest cover art and a blurb quote, which is never a bad choice for an author. A view of all your cover art, like an art gallery. Your newest blog post, which is sometimes the right choice for active bloggers. A book representing each of your series of work, or something else. So that is always the hardest decision. And it's just like a newspaper, you know, above the fold, what goes above the fold. But another thing that's become really common in websites right now is the very scrolly website. So where almost instead of having that main navigation, you just did everything in blocks. Like, here's about you, and then here's the books, and here's what's coming next, or some order of that. And the reason for this trend is, of course, the cell phone, because scrolling with one finger is easier than tapping that little menu expander and going to the thing you want. I mean, it's not easier for me. I'm not really a fan of the super scrolly website, but it's nice to think of your homepage as having more than one thing.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Looking at the different websites, I naturally am attracted to the simple ones, the negative space where your eye is drawn to where your author wants you to go. Other ones are very busy. I just don't know where to look. But I've never thought it in the context of a mobile. So I'm going to look much more. I did look at my mobile when I set this one up, and I had a few problems, depending on if people had an iPhone or Android. And a friend of mine was backing and forward saying what worked and what didn't. And I must admit, I'll be honest, I thought, oh, well, never mind. People don't look at websites on their phones. So you've corrected me there. So I'm going to have to
Well, they really do. And also, you can rely on statistics to tell you these things as well. I look at the analytics of my website a lot, and it tells me what page people are looking at. And then guess what? Like, I'll click over to that page and I'll find something that's slightly out of date or not exactly as I want it. So, you know, it's easier to follow those hints than it is to sit around and come up with grand ideas about what should be there and what people care about.
Sure.
For example,
and remember, that probably feels scary, but get on your desktop, open your website, and then open another browser and Google, how do I look at my website's analytics WordPress or whatever things you're using? And Google will say, and let us take your hand, type this, and you will type. I mean, this is so much easier than it once was. So, you know, be not daunted.
Okay.
Yeah. And
I'm going to write that up here. Be not daunted.
And of course, you can hire, you know, a college student to help you with this. there is no shame in doing that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's easier to follow hints for what people are already clicking on. And sometimes, I mean, you could, of course, do too much of this where, you know, you worry too much about what how people are finding your site or whatever, but a little bit of it, like a couple times a year, is pretty useful.
Yeah, sure. That's good to know. That was one of the things I was kind of wondering if you'd help me with, knowing how much time and effort you put into a site. So something like that, you're only saying a couple of times a year. Obviously other things you have to look at regularly, but
Well, you're looking at it once a month to add your word of the month.
Sure.
That's more than often enough to just, you know, hit out. You've got four pages. That's not much to hit every page and say, oh, oops, you know, I my book cover, you know, changed, or that just feels out of date or something. So that would all be pretty easy.
Okay.
My assistant and I have started scheduling this. Like, we call it the mini audit.
Okay.
And we look at, you know, what are the popular pages? Where are people clicking? And then we put another reminder in the calendar to go back and do it in 60 days. So, you know, so things don't go too long, but we obviously can't do that every day. We have fish to fry. We have books to write.
So just to take a little, you know, another look at the website. So you're probably going, you know, who knows, you might stick with WordPress. You might not. That's, you know, whatever. But when you get back in there, you might want to think about, as Serena said, swapping out your sidebar and having more of just a straightforward, you know, just the about. Because I guess the advantage to the sidebar that you have is that it is going to be constantly changing, because it's your Twitter, is what it is. So on the one hand, that's nice. But on the other hand, I don't know, it's a little distracting and a little busy. And I feel like if I came here and just found your about page and who I am, I would not be dissatisfied by the lack of that Twitter feed. I don't think that's, if I'm your reader, I think I'm here because A, I heard you speak somewhere, Or B, I saw one of your books and I liked it. Or C, one of my friends mentioned you and I can't remember the name of your book. So those are probably the things I'm looking for, probably not the things you're tweeting. So I don't know. Personally, I think that I would take that and maybe drop it down to the bottom. I have my Instagram feed at the bottom for the exact reason that I just said. It's a constantly changing thing, so it makes things look like they're happening. So you could put it in at the bottom and that would be fine. But
do you think there's a preference between which platform? Because obviously, at least on my version, you can only have one. So I've chosen Twitter, but I'm beginning to think, should I be using Instagram? I seem to get more connection with people. More.
Whichever one you like best.
Yeah, okay.
And if you decide to work on the styling, I would say that's another thing you don't need to invent from scratch. If you have a new book cover coming at some point soon, you could just kind of look at how did they style your name? How does the author name look on that book cover? What mm-hmm. color did they use? You know,
and you can ask for that stuff. Can I please have the color numbers? Which, by the way, you can get, if you have a book cover, this is just something for everyone, you can screenshot a tiny swath of your book cover and then Google Color Finder, and it'll give you the color code, which you can then use everywhere in your website. That's a pretty easy thing. But you can ask your cover designer, what font did you use and what colors did you use so that I can match them on my website. Okay. And even if they used a font you can't get, they'll usually give you something, you know, the most similar, like we used Bauhaus, which isn't available on Canva, but you can use this. They're going to know that these are issues.
So as an author, would you say your latest book is your brand rather than something that's more permanent?
That's a really important question, because I do think that authors are often tempted to go too far in the direction of branding like the book. But once you get a little more comfortable with your website, changing a color is like 2 minutes. So if an author said, I want the color to match my new book, I'd be like, sure, great. But if they said, I want the whole site to be rebuilt to match my book cover, I would say, that's expensive, and are you sure?
Mm.
Because some books even change cover from going hardcover to paperback. And, you know, ouch, right? You know, that's a whole redo. But sometimes just tweaking the colors is like 10 minutes. And it makes everything fall into line. I personally don't try to brand myself as an author. Like, there's no Serena brand, because I feel like I have a short attention span, and so my readers probably have a short attention span, and when they're hovering their finger over the one click button on Apple or Amazon, whether they're going to buy my book or not, they're looking at the cover, they're not looking at me, and they don't remember what my logo was. So it's okay to be a little bit of a chameleon, just so your website looks lively and up to date. Even if it means you change the color of the font, you know, every year when you have a new book.
That is so helpful. Thank you. Yeah.
Because I think, people are usually just, like Serena said, they're there to ask a question. Mm-hmm. And that question is probably, darn it, what was that book title again so I can order it? Or, I wonder if she has a new one. I'm sort of consistently surprised by how many people do visit my website. And I think that is what they're looking for, is does she have another book? That's what I'm usually looking for. So something to ask yourself when you visit author websites is what are you looking for?
Yeah, that's very true. Just this half an hour, whatever it is, has shifted my whole perspective already on what am I trying to achieve? What is it I want my reader to see? Yeah, I'm all speechless. Yeah, it's just so helpful, because, you know, I've read a book. This is how you make your website. You look at others. You follow the thing, the plan, and you get so focused and blinkered on this. I've got to do this website that you forget what it is you're trying to do. And this is what this conversation is helping me realize, is what am I trying to do as an author? And a speaker, yeah, but based on the books. Yes. So.
Yeah, I feel like if you've got... What's her book cover? What's her book name again? Does she have another one? And how can I reach her? Assuming you want that covered. You've probably answered, what, 90% of the possible questions for most authors? I think for Serena, what order do I read them in is relevant, and for some authors that is also true. But yeah, I think most of the time that's really all there is to it.
Yeah, it's great. It makes perfect sense. And yeah, I haven't thought of it like that.
All right, this has been great. Thanks for letting us, take a look and talk about this again, because it's one of our favorite topics. Let's have a little pause and then come back and talk about what we've been reading. So, Anne, we love it when our guests go first. I hope you've been reading something good lately that everyone would like to hear about. And I hope you can remember the name.
I can, because yeah. I am reading about 3 or 4 books on the go. I tend to do that.
Me too.
We're going to get to this wonderful point in your show. And so I've decided in the moment to share the book Word by Word by Marilyn McIntyre, because that's one of the books I'm reading at the moment. And it obviously dovetails into what we've been talking about today. And it's a book where you think and reflect on a word for a whole week, just one word. And so, for example, her first one is listen. So for 7 days, you think about listen. But within that week, she just gives you a page and a half. It's a really short reading to different ways you can listen, what you should be listening for. She's got receive, enjoy, let go, watch, accept, resist, allow, be still, follow, rejoice, ask, and so on. And it's just fantastic, because one, it's a short thing to read. It's just a bit of a pause in the day with a cup of tea, not even that. And it makes you think outside the box of that word and how you might apply it to your life. And it's some lovely anecdotes and stories about a woman who didn't do anything and ended up driving a cement mixer and all sorts of wonderful things. So, yeah, it's a great book. Love this book.
Cement mixer. That's exactly. Pretty cool. And yeah, I think anything that helps you, just sort of get out of whatever you're focused on in that day, in that moment. That's a lot of the times what people are looking for on Instagram and other places too, is just, knock me out of where I am and give me a little taste of something else. Give me something else to think
about. It's a challenge as well as an inspiration.
Serena, read anything good lately?
Yep. I'm still on my suspense kick. Woo. So I'm reading Local Woman Missing by Mary Kubica.
What could that possibly be about? Cement mixer.
Well,
excellent title, because we all know, right?
I know. I like how on the nose the title is. I know what I'm getting. It's a multifaceted point of view book, so there's quite a few voices in here, which is entertaining me. And yeah, it's good. It's the kind where I can't wait to hear what happened.
Well, Anne was saying she has a lot of books going, and I was realizing the other day, I have 6 books going, and it's because they're for different reasons. Like, there's a book that's letters, and there's a book that's fiction, which I'm dragging out because I love it so much. And also, I'm sort of to the point where probably the next point, time I pick it up, I'm going to read the whole thing, so it better not be 11 o'clock at night. You know, you get to that last third and you're like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to stop. So let's tuck this aside for Saturday. So last night, because I was at that point, I picked up The 90s by Chuck Klosterman, which is not necessarily in my wheelhouse. I grabbed it because it had come so strongly recommended. And it's sort of a historical look in what I guess is the Klosterman style, which I hadn't read before, at The 90s, which isn't something I think of as history, but man, when you crawl in there, you're like, oh, wow, the world was different. And I have especially enjoyed the opening chapter, which is sort of all about why people who grew up in the 90s feel like we should pretend we aren't ambitious, and how that came about. And I think it's really interesting. Anyway, he's done a lovely job, and I am definitely enjoying it. All right, well, that's it for today's show. Like I said, we've got the link to Anne's website if you want to take a look at what it looks like now. And if you're coming in here a month or two from now, you'll be taking a look at what it looks like later, in which case you better go to the show notes for this episode so you can see the pictures of where Anne started and where she went on. I popped in links to everything from Newsletter Ninja to the Authors Guild to the books we've been reading. And Anne, thanks for being on the show. Hey, is there anywhere on social media that people can follow you?
Yeah, Twitter. At Twitter, I'm at Anne Lettis. That's AnneLettiss. Mm-hmm. And Instagram, I'm at Anne Lettisier. And my Facebook author page is Anne Lettisier.
Perfect. Serena, you want to take us out?
I'd love to. Until next week, if you're not chatting us up in our Facebook group, keep your butts in the chair and your heads in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause, stop.
Thank you.